It is sort of hard to preach at. 2, 4, I don't know. Thank you. This is kind of hard too, you know. Some water has passed under the bridge since we began talking about some of these things. You've all slept since then, I hope. If you haven't, we have bigger problems. So let's do a little bit of a review, a little short review. Exodus 6:6-7, God gives the Israelites 4 promises. Number 1, I am the Lord, this is Yahweh here, and I will bring you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. Number 2, I will free you from being slaves to them. Number 3, I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and mighty acts of judgment. And number 4, I will take you as my own people, and I will be your God, Elohim. I will be your God. And he says, for this purpose, then you will know, and that's one of our big transitional words here in this church, to know by experience. That's what the word yada means, to know by experience, that I am the Lord, Yahweh, your God, Elohim. Yahweh, Elohim, who brought you out from under the yoke of the Egyptians. You have plague 1 and 2 and 3, and even the sorcerers in Egypt are saying, hey, Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. This is beyond us. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then he asks them to join the story. Don't just be an observer. Join in. And they take what was so sacred to the culture around them, and they just slaughtered it. And they put the blood on their doorposts. They joined in. It was a huge step of faith, a huge act of faith. They put their faith in him. After what they had seen and what they had heard and what they experienced, they put their faith in him. And that night they leave. And they loot the land of Egypt as they go. Pharaoh bears down on them, the sea, and they're sort of scared. They're sort of scared. And God does this thing with the winds. He parts the waters, and they walk through on dry ground. And there they stand on that east side of the river there and watch as everything that had ever enslaved them, everything that ever oppressed them, everything that had ever caused them fear, hurt them, is just washed away. Their troubles are going downriver. And they sing this song, the Lord is my strength and my song. He has become my salvation. Yeshua, he's my God, and I will praise him. See, this is their saved moment. Their saved moment. Their story is, he doesn't bring them directly to the promised land, does he? Don't you kind of wish he would? Because their story is our story, you know. So if he does that for them, he'll do it for us. Takes them through this desert. Why does he take them through the desert? We find in Deuteronomy 8:2. Remember how the Lord led you all the way in the desert these how many years? We'll come back to that later. 40 years. To humble you. To test you. Things I'm sure they were looking forward to. In order to know. In other words, he's going to tell him his reason. To know what was in your heart. See, he wants to yada. He wants to experience what is in their heart. Whether or not you would keep his commands. It's an easy connection to make. Obey, and I know you love me. Obey, and I know you love me. But he tells them, I want you to understand that you are not created to be independent, self-sufficient, self-determined. I want you to be humbled. Lower yourself. Lower. Be lowered. And although I know that you are out of Egypt, I'm the one who brought you out. You're here now. I know that Egypt is not out of you. And I want to purify you. We're going to test it. We're going to boil it. We're going to melt it down. And all those impurities are going to rise to the top. And we're going to scrape them off. I want you to be purified. Because I want to know whether you love me. By whether you obey me. So they have this first test. The place of bitterness. Test number one. They travel for some time. How long? Does anybody remember? 3 days. Not terribly long. But if you're without water, you might think it's long. Travel for 3 days and they get to this place where there's water, but they find out the water's bitter. It doesn't taste good. They can't drink it. They're kind of upset and they're complaining. Oh, how could you do this to us? Why did you do this to us, you know? See, they've experienced God's power, but they haven't experienced his love. Sometimes we struggle on both sides of that coin. Sometimes we've experienced his power, but we're not sure if we have enough faith in his character, his nature, his love. Or sometimes we've experienced the love, but we're not sure if he's got enough power to see us through these big, horrible things that we're facing in life. Just like they do. God is merciful, though. Thank you, God Almighty, for your mercy. And more than that, he's gracious. He makes the bitter water sweet. So there's this moment of refreshment. And while they're being refreshed with the sweet water, he explains to them, look, look, I'm teaching you and I'm testing you. All you need to do here is listen and obey. Real simple, isn't it? This is not a complex thing in our lives. But sometimes the simplest things are the hardest, the most difficult. Just listen and obey. This is a Sunday school song that we sing. And then he leads them to this beautiful oasis in the middle of the desert. Then we have test number two, the place of craving. They are not starving. They are overloaded with food and water. They are not starving, even though they say, we're starving. They're not starving. They're craving. Psalm 78:18 puts it this way. They willfully put God to the test by demanding the food they crave. They spoke against God, saying, can God spread a table in the desert? This should resound with us. I want God to give us, or me, what I want and when I want it and how I want it. Let's see if God can really do it. Have you ever, can you honestly, don't raise your hands. Can you honestly say you've tested God in your mind and your heart? Man, God is merciful. More than that, he's gracious. It is good for God to deny our cravings, isn't it? God is going to give them what he wants them to have, which is better than indulging their cravings. God gives them bread. From what we can tell, it's a wonderful, sweet bread. And he gives them flocks of quail every day. And they're to follow his instructions. Again, it's this listen and obey. Listen and obey. Follow my instructions. Depend on me every day. And you will learn to be comfortable. Something we don't want to do. You will learn to be comfortable with just. How many of you want to be comfortable with just enough, just in time? Turn to Exodus, please. Exodus chapter 17. We're going to read the first seven verses of Exodus chapter 17. Genesis, Exodus. So that's book 2. 17th chapter comes right after the 16th. Verses 1 through 7. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, But there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses replied, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?" But the people were thirsty for water there. And they grumbled against Moses. They said, it's going to become a familiar refrain. "Why did you bring us out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" Just a little while ago, they were dying of hunger. Now they're dying of thirst. Moses cried out to the Lord, "What am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me." The Lord answered Moses, "Walk on ahead of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel and called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" So if you're understanding the scenery, understanding the backdrops, the props on stage, the costumes, even the accents that the actors will use will make what the playwright has written much richer, much fuller. It's going to make it pop. So I want to talk a little bit here for a moment about the backdrop, the scenery. Where are they? Rephidim. Does anyone know what Rephidim means? A couple of you could look it up real fast. It means rest or place of rest. Now, we don't exactly know where this is. We don't know the exact location of Rephidim, but there's a couple that are given that have really good possibilities. And they're right near the base of the mountains in a very shady spot. And near the base of the mountain, you might expect to find water coming down the mountain. So they're coming to a place where there should be shade and water and rest. In fact, it's called the place of rest. But when the Israelites arrive, there's no water. It's dried up. Now, let's move on in the text to where God, through Moses, leads them. It's a place called Horeb. Does anyone know what Horeb means? No? Well, it's in the Mount Sinai is in that range, the Horeb range. But just go along with it a little. Horrible. Okay? Horeb means dried up, dusty, rocky, parched ground, or it's actually the mountain of dried up ground, is Mount Horeb. So he leads them there. This is about 2 miles long, this mountain range of Horeb, and Sinai is one of the mountains in that mountain range. And they're gonna go on to camp there for almost a year at Mount Sinai. So you have this contrast of images. They arrive at Rephidim, a place. There's dust flowing in my face. I'm not crazy, just to let you know. You see someone doing this kind of stuff, and you wonder, you know, I don't know, it's windy outside. I hope the building's stable. You have this contrast of images. They come to Rephidim, a place of rest. And you would expect there, the base of that mountain, in that shady place, to find water and shade and cool and rest. And they find none. But then God takes them to Horeb, this place of ruggedy, parched ground. And there, they find water. So what's the problem here? Expectations. Thank you. Someone's learning. It's awesome. Lights flickering. It's great. The lights above your head flickering. Expectations. Your expectations are far more influential, far more powerful than your actual circumstances. So we've set the scenery. That's the scenery. And this contrast of pictures, this contrast of places. And then we have this third test. It's the place of strife. People are traveling from place to place, what? As the Lord commands them. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. I've had that experience as a kid. I've had that experience as an apprentice when I was learning, when I was becoming a journeyman. Your boss will tell you, do this, or do that, or do this, or do that. And it seems like this endless do, 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 and you don't know why. You have no idea why. I don't know about you, but I don't like to do things when I don't know why I'm doing them. But they're traveling from place to place as God is instructing them. And they come to Rephidim. Their expectations are let down, and they grumble. The word means murmur. Murmur. They did this over here with the bitter water, but they go a little further. They quarrel. They begin to quarrel with Moses. They are arguing with him. This means to have strife or contend as an adversary. So they're taking this sort of, they're not like where they were with bitter water. Give us some water. They're over here. Hey, what's wrong with you? Okay? It's a little bit of a different tone from grumbling to fighting. Moses expresses here that he does not know what to do and he's afraid for his life. They're going to stone me. I'm afraid they're going to stone me. You might ask, what's the difference between the first time and the second time, grumbling and fighting? The first time, they were questioning whether God would supply their needs. What are we to drink? What are we to drink? What are we going to do? Oh, poor me. 3 days, and here we are, and the water's bitter. Okay? We all do this in our lives. Don't be condescending to the Israelites. We're all like this on a daily basis. Here, they come to this place. They're demanding. They begin to demand, give us water to drink. So I'm playing it up a little bit here, being a little melodramatic. What are we going to do? Hey, get us some water. And fight. There's a difference in their tone between the first time they found bitter water and the next time they found no water. The key to understanding this, too, can be seen in two different sentences, the first sentence of this passage and the last sentence of this passage. First, they traveled from place to place as the Lord expected. And the second, is the Lord among us or not? From place to place. Have you in your life gone from place to place, not knowing, not understanding, not seeing, not having distant sight, short-sighted? That's what they're doing. They don't get it. They don't understand. We're walking east, and then we're walking west, and then we're walking east, and then we're walking south, and we don't know what's going on. It seems like we're going in a circle. What's going on? But they are following God's instructions to some degree, are they not? Maybe, I don't know, we could question whether they're following it in their heart. Like, oh, yay, another journey today. Okay, but they are following. They are traveling from place to place as God instructs. Picking up manna, collecting the quail, eating, learning just enough, just in time. Remember, they have the pillar of fire by and the pillar of cloud by. Yep. Good. That was a good answer. She got the last one. Is it not obvious that Yahweh Elohim is with them in a very constant, very visual, I suspect, very auditory way? They can see him. They can hear this. They know he's there. It kind of reminds me of them asking, why did you bring us to starve? When they're not starving. They're not starving. They have a lot of water and a lot of food. And here they're asking, is he with us? What do you mean, is he with us? There he is. He is right there. Can you not open your eyes and your ears? I think there might be something going on here. It seems as though the mentality has developed that we have obeyed him. We've gone here, and we've gone there, and we're picking up the manna, picking up the quail, and we're going back over there, we're back over here. We're doing what he says as he instructs us, that he might owe them something. I think that is part of the equation. But Pastor Brian, why would you say such a thing? You know why? Because that is the culture of Egypt. That is what it is like where they have just come from. That is all they have known all their lives. You worship and you serve the gods and you follow their instructions and they will bless you. And if you don't, they won't. But if you do, you'll eat. So I think these sentences are important here. They followed God as he instructed them from place to place. And they're asking, is he with us or not? There is some expectation in this relationship, a hopeful quid pro quo. A hopeful Egyptian mindset, Egyptian indoctrinated Hebrews, a mindset of quid pro quo. It would make sense that if we follow your instructions, you will bless my endeavors. I think that's what we're looking at. Does God need to be where we are, or do we need to be where God is? And if there's ever any distance or question between the two, is it his fault or ours? Do we need to do what God wants us to do, or does he need to do what we want him to do? Is God here to fulfill our desires, or are we here to participate in his? Does God owe man anything? God is not beholden to man. He's not beholden to those Israelites. He is the one who brought them out. He is the one who set them free. He is the one who bought them back. He is the one who has adopted them, made them his, and he is theirs. God owes them nothing. God owes them nothing. They owe him what? Everything. Everything. The audacity. Give us what we want. The audacity is striking. And again, thank God for his mercy and his graciousness. But this time there's a little more sternness. There's a little more sternness in the imagery. He tells Moses to walk ahead of the people, to take some elders with him. And he says, hey, bring that staff with you. What's the staff a symbol of? Remember how these people have grown up? That staff is a symbol of authority given from the gods to rule over the people. So Moses has the staff and he walks. And I have a feeling that it was sort of like everybody went, oh, he grabbed the staff. Remember the staff at the river when we crossed? Remember the staff with the plagues? Oh, Moses grabbed the staff. My dad is frail, he's weak, he's old, but he gives me a look every once in a while. I'm almost 50. You know what I'm saying? He gives me a look and I get a little shudder. He can't catch me. But there's this moment where I go, it's okay, went a little too far, you know? I have a feeling that happens when they see this staff. And he goes out, he takes that staff, and he strikes a rock, and he strikes a rock in the rugged, dry, parched place, and water flows out of the rock. Supplies their needs. You can imagine, just put yourself in their shoes, sandals, what they might have felt. I think first, they probably had some shock, maybe. that water is pouring out of a rock when it just wasn't a minute ago? A solid rock. Second, there might be some joy or some relief. Oh, water! We have fresh water. Yes, quench our thirst. Third, I wonder if they had any regret. I wonder in that moment after their thirst was quenched, after they had been satisfied again, if they, we did it. We did it again. Because they quarreled. They tested. They demanded of God. I think it's easy for us to identify with them. It should be. I think it's easy, it's the natural inclination to say, what were they experiencing? What are they going through? What are they living through? But do you ever ask, what is God experiencing in this moment? What is he experiencing? The joy of their obedience? The joy of their calm, faithful heart? Or is he experiencing some sadness or frustration in their attitude or their contention with him? They're demanding of him. Remember, their story is, if we are believers in Jesus Christ, we have been brought out from under the brutal oppression of slavery to this world system, slavery to sin, the authority of Satan. We've been set free from all of that. It is behind us. There's no power, no control, no authority from it over you anymore. We have been redeemed. We have been bought back with the precious blood of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Not with just one outstretched arm, but with two. And we are his, and he is ours forever, Father and child. Their story is our story, and we struggle in the same areas in which they do. What is the nature of God? Do you ever contemplate that when you are questioning or you're doubting or you're fearing, you are contending with one of the aspects of his nature? Is he wise enough? Is he good enough? Is he kind enough? Is he compassionate enough? Is he just enough? And these are the things that trouble our hearts. If we really do pursue Christ, if we really take that one step through the river and seek his kingdom first and seek his righteousness first, will he actually provide all our needs? Or are we willing to stop craving the things that we have been set free from? Are we willing to stop craving the things that enticed us and allured us and drew us in and then shackled us? Or do you ever get into this mindset? I've followed you. I've obeyed you. I pray. I read my Bible. I go to church. I contribute to the offering. I witness as I feel led. I minister in areas that are suited to me. So, bless my endeavors. Bless my life. I just can't figure out why things aren't going my way when I live for you. When I live for you. This is the Believer's Entitlement Program. And you may have a hard time admitting or confessing that that may go on in your life. I will tell you, that has been and sometimes still is a part of my thinking. I grew up in this world system. This world's system shaped certainly my experiences, but also my expectations. You do this, you do that. Hey, this city, right? Chicago. Pay for play. One hand washes the other. I don't know about you, but I struggle to leave that in the world and not bring it into this faith. The Believer's Entitlement Program has been a part of some of my faith's darkest, driest moments. And it's even been egged on by good, well-meaning Christians. But you're a pastor. God should. Wait until you see what God does because you've served in this area. Blah, blah, blah. It's not the way it works. I have a couple questions for you as we close this out this morning. How many of you spiritually, financially, physically, emotionally, intellectually, relationally, have been or are in a desert place? Raise your hands. Okay. Not everyone has their hand raised. So to those of you who don't have your hand raised, get ready. Because if you are not in it or have been in it, guess what? You're going to be in it. It's coming like a freight train. These desert places are a part of all of our lives. How long were these people in that desert? 40 years. 40 years. Remember how long I led you in the desert, all these 40 years, to humble you, to test you, so that I would know what's in your heart if you would obey. How long were they in the desert? 40 years. How long were they intended to be in the desert? I don't think 11 days. He led them longer than that. As long as it takes. As long as it takes. Have you been humbled? Have you been lowered? Have you been decreased? So that he might increase. Have you been emptied of yourself so that you might be filled with the Spirit? Have you died to self and sin and society and this world system so that you might be alive to God? Or do you still value? Do you still value this world's system of pride and self-sufficiency and self-determination and independence? Have you been humbled? It's going to take as long as it takes. Have you been purified? Are you going from 10 carat to 12, 14? 18, 22, 24? Where are you at in the purification process? Is there still scum that should be scraped off that you are clinging to in your life? Are you still in this worldly mindset, the mindset that inevitably we're going to be indoctrinated in? The system, the way things work. Maybe the I serve and obey you, I worship you and praise you, so you bless my endeavors mindset. Maybe that's just mine. Maybe I'm the only one who's experienced that. Are you still in this world's thinking? It's going to take as long as it takes. Above all, when it comes right down to it, right down to the base, what is God experiencing when it comes to your heart? Does he experience obedience? Submission? Is he experiencing your love for him? Is he experiencing your faith? Or is he experiencing your doubt? Your fear? Your grumbling? Your complaining? Maybe even your contention. Hey, God, what is God experiencing? Listen to what is said of this group of people in Psalm 78. A stubborn, their story is, man, I am so stubborn sometimes. I don't know if you've ever been in this moment, but you're like, as a believer, the Spirit is speaking to your spirit, and you're like, I know this is wrong, but A stubborn and rebellious generation whose hearts were not loyal to God. Who are they loyal to? I thought I heard someone say it. Themselves. Whose spirits were not faithful to him. Jesus is the author and what? Perfecter of our faith. So the desert places of our lives, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, financially, relationally, and any other LE that you can think of, they're going to last as long as it takes to accomplish his purposes.